first place we stop's important. The Ohio polls show us not doing quite as well as we would like, and we think this is an area we can strengthen our position. We're going to go from there to Newark and from there to Springfield and be a number of places tomorrow in Ohio. So we're working pretty well all over the country. I've just been told we're in our 28th state. This will be our third trip to Ohio, so it's important.
Yes. Senator, has the president, for instance, told you privately that he has any special role for you if you're elected with a ticket in November?
We've discussed agriculture and my possible role there insofar as exports are concerned, and I think one reason I may be on the ticket is because of some experience in that field. Beyond that, there have been no specifics. They may come, but they haven't come yet.
Senator, what about the entire farm vote? Some have been predicting you and Ford are not going to get that vote.
Well, I think once the American farmer, and he's beginning to understand more and more each day of Carter's position or no position on agriculture, he doesn't have a program. He won't tell us what it is. He won't tell us what it costs. He won't tell us how it differs. We hear from some, quote, farm spokesman named, I think his name is Smith or someone from Georgia. We haven't heard the governor spell out his farm program. I think we have a pretty good farm program. I think we need to update it and reassess it, increase the target prices, but all in all, we've got a good program. I believe we're going to get most of that farm vote.
Senator, why is the Republican Party faced with a farm slippage in Ohio this year?
Oh, excuse me. Well, I think essentially it's based on the embargo, but Carter has a number of positions on the embargo, and it's coming around. I think farmers are concerned about that. They didn't like it. I didn't like it either. But that's behind us. We have to look ahead, and they're not going to let one thing stand in their way of a free agriculture, and President Ford promises that.
What are you going to be telling Ohio farmers here now?
Well, if I have a chance to visit with them privately, I'll ask them how they view it. We learn a lot by listening sometimes. I'm going to talk about big government, big spending, new programs. Carter advocates his close ties to labor, his the fact that he favors registration of handguns. I just don't believe he has a philosophy that's in tune with this part of America, or any part for that matter.
Senator, when you talk about the labor leaders, are you implying that they aren't representing their rank and file, that somehow they're illegitimately in power?
Well, I don't see... No, that's your words. They have a right to speak out, and they have. You know, they've been very caustic in their criticism of President Ford. I don't think they reflect the views of a great many of their members.
Senator, today...
Pardon? No, I think he is pretty well narrowed down to one position. Yeah. I don't think he's deviated from that. I think there's always that, you know, you're straining at a gnat. If you say that there's never going to be an embargo, if we have a crop failure or some other international disaster, you've got to protect the American consumer. I think anyone would understand that. President Ford does.
Senator Dole?
I think he's made it clear.
Jimmy Carter says that you misrepresented his stand on tax cuts, and you said it was going to be for no tax cut for the middle income. Have you backed down on your criticism?
Well, I haven't backed down. I think if he says it's a misunderstanding, then he ought to have a consultation with the Associated Press. That's who interviewed him. I didn't interview him. It's his statement, not mine. I think it's another... I think he gives too many interviews. That's his problem. Muskies for Ford. No, that's good. That isn't Edmund. No, I understand. I didn't think Ed had gotten out here yet. Well, I see one or two Carter people in the audience. We're glad to have you. Maybe if you listen carefully, you'll change your mind. Frankly, I hope there are a great many undecided in this audience. Many Democrats and many independents and many Republicans, and really just concerned Americans concerned about the future of our country and the direction we're going to take for the next 4 years. I think it's serious business. I think you have a right to question the candidates. I think you have a right to know where the candidates stand. I also think there's a corollary obligation for the candidates to tell Americans where they stand, whether they live in Marietta, Ohio, or Russell, Kansas, or any other metropolitan area. I want to say that I'm very pleased to be here with Tom and Sam. I think Sam, Tom is singing his song as someone else is taking your place. And I can only say for Tom Johnson, he is an outstanding young man. And I hope that I may have had some influence for the good in getting Tom started in politics, because when we worked together at the Republican National Committee, he made it very clear that he was concerned, oh yes, about the Republican Party, yes, about Republicans generally, but above and beyond that, about America and about young Americans and young Americans' role in government. So Tom, I wish you the best of success, and I'll keep that promise if you're elected and I'm elected. Remember, that's both of us. You're looking like you're in pretty good shape, and we're trying to get better shape every day. I'll come back to the 95th, is that the right district? 95th district. And we'll have a big celebration, just the two of us. I think he owes me a dinner anyway. Of course, I'm a very good friend of Clarence Miller's. We served together for a brief time on the House Committee on Agriculture. I know where Clarence is today, where he is every day. He's in the Congress of the United States, where he's preserving that 100% voting record for the citizens of his district. And for that, I commend him. He is an outstanding member from this state. And of course, I am privileged to serve with Senator Bob Taft, one of my good friends. And someone was trying to calculate how many times I'd been in Ohio over the past few years. They said 14 or 15 or 16. But it's been a great many times, and I have enjoyed it. I've learned a lot about Ohio. I've learned a lot about politics. I've learned a lot about a great many people in Ohio. I haven't quite learned Woody Hayes' secret of success, and I think he had a little trouble with that himself on Saturday, but there'll be better days, and better days are ahead. I want to talk very briefly about the contest we're in, talk very briefly about what I consider to be an obligation and our responsibility. I think the American people have come to realize that big government and big spending, both of which originated and flourished under Democrat presidents, does not solve problems. In fact, I think we've come to understand it creates many of our problems. I would also suggest, and I think most everyone here would agree, the debates demonstrated President Ford's leadership capacities and showed us that Mr. Carter's program does not differ in any substantial way from the old approaches which have brought this nation bigger government, bigger spending, and higher taxes and less freedom for the individual. And I don't believe, and I can say this certainly for President Ford, he doesn't believe, this is a time for more spending. It's not a time for expansion of government programs. We think it's time we take a good hard look at those programs, redefine those programs, and where they work, let's make them work. But where they're ineffective and obsolete, let's move on to some other program that could work for all Americans. Now, we don't have much to go on insofar as Governor Carter's record is concerned. He makes many statements. He has many positions. He has at least three or four positions on nearly every issue in America. And, of course, that's his right. He wants to be president. He wants to be president so bad he'll tell any group, anything, anytime to get their vote. But I can say for Mr. Ford, and certainly I can speak for myself, that will not be our tendency. And I would only ask this group to take a look at the Democrat platform. It contains 65 new or expanded or increased spending programs. It contains 22 new or expanded or increased agency authorizations or agency responsibilities to carry out new programs. Yet Mr. Carter claims that he wants to streamline the government, to save the taxpayers' money. And I would only suggest, as I have many times before, we took just five of those new programs or five of those increased spending programs, added up the cost, and the cost was not $10 billion, not $20 billion, but over $100 billion. And don't misunderstand me, many of the programs have very lofty objectives. But as I look around this audience and see young people, and very, very young people still in their mother's arms, I wonder who's going to pay the bill. When are we going to draw the line? When are you going to start demanding fiscal responsibility of the Congress? Yes, and of the President. And I think we have that responsibility. It's yours, it's mine, it's President Ford's. And certainly it's going to be brought up more and more in this debate. Now, we saw in the televised debates two good men. I don't quarrel with Mr. Carter. I think he has ambition. I don't quarrel with ambition. He wants to be president. I don't quarrel with that fact. He's won his party's nomination, and he's now running against Mr. Ford, and someone will win and someone will lose on November 2nd. But before you make a judgment, whether you're committed, uncommitted, undecided, let me just call attention to a few things that he said. Now, Mr. Carter has a series of TV spots running where he talks about what he did as governor and what he'll do as president. He said, I'll do as president what I did as governor. Well, if we look at his record, this is more than just a statement. It's a warning to all Americans. You ought to be alert. You ought to know what he did as governor. He attacks a massive bureaucracy created by his own party and promises he would reorganize the government. Well, let's just take one or two quick looks at what he would do insofar as government's concerned. When he is pushed to explain his plan, which is true in every case, you ask about his farm program, he doesn't have any farm program. You ask about his domestic program, he doesn't have any domestic program. You ask about tax reform, and these are his words, not mine. He said, we're going to raise the taxes of those above the median income. Well, the median income in America is $14,000 per family. That's working wife, working husband, working children. $14,000 is the median income. He also says he'll tax all income the same. And that should alert many small businessmen. Many men and women who buy stocks, many farmers. Let's take a look at what he did in Georgia, because he keeps talking about what a great job he did. In fact, they published a little booklet at taxpayers' expense in Georgia and started to circulate until somebody called it their attention. They passed out a few. They were puff pieces promoting Governor Carter. So what did he do? Well, he said one thing. He had 300 agencies and he reduced those to 22. That's true as far as it goes. But it is false when it implies because of what it implies, because many of those 300 agencies were never funded. They never operated. But he uses the 300 figure and says, well, I shrunk that to 22. He said he had a reduction in the number of agencies. The facts are that he didn't reduce the number of people in the Georgia bureaucracy. He added he increased that by some 20%. And what were the results of that reorganization? And Mr. Carter can stand up before this audience and speak in very grave tones about our future and empathize and explain how President Ford is responsible for all of our faults, and all of our faults are President Ford's. He never once utters that the Liberal Democrats have controlled the Congress for the last 22 years running. Not half that time, but every year for 22 years, the Democrats have controlled the Congress. He talks about this great Department of Human Resources, which he created when he reorganized state government. What did his successor say about the Department of Human Resources? And let me quote Governor Busby. And Governor Busby's a Democrat. He's not a Republican. He said, when I took office, the Department of Human Resources was an organizational nightmare. The department was under attack from both legislators and citizens for doing an inadequate job. I asked for a year to straighten out the department, and the General Assembly agreed. Governor Busby is still trying to straighten out Mr. Carter's Department of Human Resources. So the results of Mr. Carter's reorganization in Georgia was to increase the size of government, increase the number of people on the government payroll, and further decrease the effectiveness of the government in precisely the area where Mr. Carter says his concerns are focused on the needs of the people. And so I say as honestly and candidly and as openly as I can, take a look at us. Take a look at our record. We're not perfect. You'll find some imperfections. You'll find some areas of disagreement. But I suggest you have a choice. You have a choice in this part of the country, in this part of Ohio, and our choice is the same here as it's going to be in Kansas or California or Oregon or the state of Georgia. We're not going to say one thing here and another thing in some other place. You have a choice between a very, very, very liberal candidate, Mr. Carter, and one of the most liberal senators who has one of the highest ratings in the so-called Americans for Democratic Action, the most liberal group in America. Or you can have sound, conservative, to moderate government under President Ford and Bob Dole. And that's really what it's all about. You can have a president who's concerned about defense. I saw a sign a while ago, this country needs vitamin, we need vitamin B1 for a strong defense. Well, Governor Carter has about three positions on the B1. Depending on where he is, he has a different position. He says it ought to be delayed, then he goes out to Omaha where they have these SAC bases, and he said, well, maybe we ought to take a look at it. His whole theory on defense is not very strong, I say to my young friends in the audience. I want to be number one in this world for the sake of peace, not for anything else. Not for war, but for the sake of peace. And I don't think we can afford to be number two. And at the very time our Secretary of Defense is reporting a big buildup of missiles in Russia and increases in their defense effort, Carter's running around the country to appease his liberal friends saying we ought to cut $5 to $7 billion from defense. He's also saying we ought to grant a general pardon for those who evaded the draft. Well, I say we've still got hundreds missing in Southeast Asia. I think we ought to concern ourselves and we ought to get our priorities right. I'm more concerned about those forgotten Americans in Southeast Asia than I am about those who forgot America in a time of need. And I assume there's some concern in this area about registration of handguns. Maybe you're all for it. Some say it's just a step in the door. Well, 11 senators have voted for registration of handguns, and one is Senator Mondale. And the Democrats have it in their platform. And Governor Carter charged out to Montana to make his gun control speech, registration of handguns. And the Democrat running for the Senate there to replace Senator Mansfield had to issue a press release saying, I don't agree with Governor Carter. And I just ask those in this audience, because I think you're going to make, I see a cap of cig in the audience too. But I ask those in this audience to take a cold, hard look. I've known President Ford for 16 years. And any way you cut it, President Ford is an honest, decent, open American, concerned about the future of America. And if you watch debates very closely, you saw that confidence, you saw that leadership, and every poll taken since the debate clearly showed, not Republican polls, not polling Republicans, whether it was CBS or Time or Newsweek or New York Times or whatever, or Lou Harris, every poll showed that President Ford won that debate by a good margin. Now, I've been asked, and I've said, partly in jest, with more frequency in the past few weeks, how I got on the ticket. Why are you running for vice president? I said, well, in the first place, it's indoor work and no heavy lifting. But secondly, on August 19th in Kansas City, Missouri, and I'm from Kansas, I had no real notion I would be on the ticket. Everybody had to be on someone's list before you had a chance. So I made up a lot of lists, and I sent my list all over Kansas City. But somewhere we forgot to send a list to the right hotel where the president was. So I assumed it was going to be Senator Baker or someone else. But on August the 19th, we heard a newscast which said that the list is down to four. Well, one was Ann Armstrong, and she was over in Scotland. And whoever was chosen had to be back in Kansas City by noon, so I assumed that she couldn't possibly make it from Scotland to Kansas City. It was already 8 o'clock in the morning, so I scratched her off the list. The next was Bill Ruckelshaus, an outstanding Republican from Indiana. He was in Tacoma, Washington. I figured he couldn't get back to Kansas City in time. Besides, his name was too long for a button. So I'd left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I said to my wife, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I think I've got a chance. So when the press started gathering in the hallway, we got a little nervous and excited because I was right next to the suite occupied by John Conley. There'd been a lot of speculation about Governor Conley, and I said, well, it looks like he's going to be the next vice president or the candidate. But I said, just in case, Elizabeth, why don't you go to the door and listen? And it's legal in Kansas City to listen from the inside out. It's only when you listen the other way that you have problems. So she went to the door and heard my name. And we didn't know whether somebody was having a pineapple juice party or whether I was really under consideration. But in any event, I got dressed and just sort of stood by in case the phone would ring, and we stayed away from the phone. And the phone did ring, and it was President Ford. But because of our proximity to the Conley suite, and thinking he might have gotten the wrong number, I accepted before I identified myself, and that's really how it all happened. So and I'll just take another minute or two. Some people ask how you get into politics or how you get into anything. Tom was reading my biography there, my introduction, just about like we wrote it out on the way over here. And you remember the horror bit about the war and all that stuff. And I remember when I was speaking in Indiana one time, I went out for a fundraising dinner in my first term in Congress. I arrived at 5 o'clock on Saturday and had already sold 10 tickets. And the county chairman was about to have a nervous breakdown, so he rushed me out to the radio station where I had a quick interview. We talked about where I was born, and I was Congressman Bob Dole. Doyle, they didn't know and didn't care, and didn't make much difference. But as we left the radio station drive back to town, the announcer was saying that Congressman Dole will be in town tonight. He's speaking at the Green Lantern or wherever it was. I don't remember precisely. Said he's born in Kansas, reared in Kansas. Prior to World War II, he was a pre-medical student. He suffered a serious head injury in the war, and then he went into politics. So I don't know. I don't know how you got where you are, but I know how I got where I am. But I want to say, finally, I'm very proud to be running with President Ford. He's all Americans, all American. That's what he is. He's a man you can trust. And keep that word in mind, trust. He's a man you can trust. He's not going to give you four or five opinions on every issue. You may not like the one he gives, but he's going to stick with it for the sake of America. And let me say to those who may come from rural areas, I've been on the Agriculture Committee 8 years in the House, 8 years in the Senate. I think I understand the problems. I don't like the prices. I didn't like the embargoes. I don't see any more of those in sight, except in some extreme emergency. But I have discussed my role with President Ford, and one of my roles will be to try to help the American farmer in the area of exports. That's where the future lies for the American farmer. That's where the future lies for small business. That's where the future lies for rural America. And I hope to have a very active role in that. But let me conclude as I started. I'm pleased to be here. Martha, I'm pleased to be with you again, with all the other good Republicans. And I say very earnestly, I hope there are Democrats here. I hope there are independents here. We need your help. And we think you need our help. Not because we're Republicans, not because we're selfish enough to think that we can only do the job, but because we offer you an alternative. We think we offer you the only alternative for good, sound government, for a strong America, for less federal spending, less bureaucracy, real tax reform. And I say, our hope is in President Ford. He'll say it like it is. He'll stick with all Americans. He'll be there on November 2nd, and we need you there on November 2nd. Thank you very much.
In agriculture, if you get on the, into the White House, but you have now a role in the Senate,
right.
The Agriculture Committee. What makes you think that you can do more in the White House than you've been able to do in the Senate?
Well, I think you keep narrowing the odds. I'm one of 100 in the Senate. If I'm vice president, I'll be, you know, right next to the president. I should have some influence. I'll have very good relations with cabinet officers and others in the Senate, many of my friends, Democrats and Republicans. President Ford has indicated I would have a role in exports of farm commodities. I assume I do some traveling overseas. All in all, I think it's something that I understand, that I can be very helpful to the American farmer, the American producer.
How specifically do you think you can increase exports for the rural farmer?
Well, you know, to say how many tons or how many bushels, I can't say, but I think we need a strong export system. We have one now. We've doubled and tripled our exports over the years. It just seems to me that I can be of some help to the Secretary of Agriculture, whoever it may be, and to the President and to the American farmer.
One of the favorite topics right now is Governor Carter's interview with Playboy magazine. If you had been offered the same contract with Playboy, would you have accepted?
No way.
How about the debates with President Ford and Carter? Do you think that the combination of the debates and the interview with Carter will be detrimental to the Democrats?
I think Governor Carter's hurt himself, and I think it showed a very, very poor judgment. That's the key. If he's going to make that kind of a judgment on a simple interview, what's he going to do when he has a tough problem to face? And I think that's really the essence of it. I wouldn't comment on what he said. That's his problem. But it just seems to me that every day someone in public life has to make a judgment. Sometimes we make the wrong judgment. I think in this case, his was totally wrong. And his AP interview about tax reform apparently was done without much preparation. His interview in Reader's Digest, where he sort of says he wouldn't sell wheat to Russia, that inflation is because of excessive grain sales, all add up to, lack of judgment.
Governor Carter points out that the number of people on the poverty rolls has increased during the last Republican administration, and he points the finger at the White House. What do you say to that?
Well, it's very strange. When the Democrats have been in control in Congress all these years, and the poverty rate's been increasing, that they always find someone to point at, whether it be a Democrat or Republican in the White House. I think it's time that Congress has shouldered some of these burdens. That's where he ought to be pointing his finger. We enact the programs. The President can't spend money that we don't appropriate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The success, the degree of success of President Ford's swing the last couple of days through the South.
It's hard to assess right off, but I assume there'll be some surveys following his visit. And then there'll be some determination made at the high levels in his campaign, whether, you know, how much of an impact it had, whether we can carry some of the states he visited. But, you know, it was successful from the standpoint that, among others, Governor Wallace showed up, and I agree with Wallace, it's probably a courtesy to the office, but significant. There's a great deal of support for President Ford in the South. I've been, I think, in 9 southern states. If there's movement in that direction, hopefully the visit by the President really got it to moving, and we can carry some of those states.
Do you feel that the President is beginning to cut into Governor Carter's South, his support in the South.
No doubt about it. I think we are making great gain, but of course, you get down to the nitty-gritty of it. If you're 2-1 behind, and now you're 3-2 behind, you're still behind. And that's the big, you know, can we make enough of a gain in several states to carry those states and get the electoral votes? The fact that we narrow the lead from 62-30, say to 50-46 or something, doesn't help us much if we lose all the electoral votes.
Your visit here today is mainly to woo rural votes, agricultural votes, the farming vote. What can you tell farmers? What are you going to tell them? What's the Republican Party telling them that they can do for them that they haven't done for them in the past?
Well, I think we've done a great deal for the American farmer in the past. First thing we can promise him, we're going to have very much the same program, which gives the farmer more freedom. It needs some adjustment. We need to raise the loan rates. We need to adjust the target prices. But it gives the farmer freedom. We can also tell the American farmer, we've made a mistake once on embargoes. There's not going to be any other embargoes, grain embargoes, unless there's some extreme emergency like a crop disaster or a shortage in this country. And, you know, I think that's what we can tell the American farmer. In addition, I've had 16 years experience in agriculture in the House and Senate committees. I'm going to have a very major role to play in the next 4 years, and I would hope the American farmer could take some heart in that.
What is your feeling on Secretary of State Kissinger's interplay in the last few weeks, especially in the last several days in Rhodesia?